Okay, well, it's 12:01, and so I think it's a good time to get started. First of all, let me say I am very excited for the return of ICFRC programming here in January of 2023. I'm also very excited to be kicking off our first event of the year as ICFRC's new executive director. I have big shoes to fill, very big shoes to fill. Catherine Wittenben, our previous ED, was amazing. And so I'm going to do my best to keep up the great work with ICFRC. So I'm thrilled that you're all here. Let me say good afternoon and welcome to today's program featuring guest speaker, Ambassador Kenneth Quinn. Thanks to the ambassador and to everyone who has joined us in person. Well, not in person. I should update my script. Who has joined us online? As I said, my name is Peter Gerlach, ICFRC's Executive Director, and I'm a visiting assistant professor in international studies at the University of Iowa. ICFRC wants to acknowledge and thank its annual donors, members, sponsors, and partners for their support. This list includes the Iowa Arts Council through the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs, Humanities Iowa and the National Endowment for the Humanities, the University of Iowa's International Programs, Honors Program, and Public Policy Center, the Stanley UI Foundation Support Organization, Midwest One Bank, Taxes Plus, and City Channel 4 for providing online access to ICFRC's programs, along with the UI Library Archives. ICFRC has adopted the Native American Land Acknowledgement prepared for the City of Iowa City's Ad Hoc Truth and Reconciliation Commission and Human Rights Commission. ICFRC recognizes that our home community of Iowa City now occupies the homelands of Native American nations to whom we owe our commitment and dedication. The full text of ICFRC's acknowledgement is on our website at icfrc.org. Okay, as we get started, I would like to cover some Zoom etiquette tips with you. This is the time to make sure you know where your video and your audio mute and unmute buttons are located. You are already muted, so we ask you to please keep your audio and video turned off for the duration of the presentation so that you don't interrupt our speaker. Following the ambassador's presentation at about 12:45, we'll have about a 15-minute Q&A session. You'll be able to submit your questions via the chat function. At that time, we invite you to turn on your video, but please keep your audio muted to avoid any background noise. I would like now to introduce our very honored speaker, Ambassador Quinn. Dr. Kenneth Quinn served for 32 years as an American diplomat, including as ambassador to the Kingdom of Cambodia, as a rural development advisor in the Mekong Delta of Vietnam, on the National Security Council staff at the White House, and as director of Iowa Shares, the humanitarian campaign formed by Iowa Governor Robert Ray that sent life-saving aid to Cambodian genocide victims. Following his foreign service career, he served for 20 years as president of the World Food Prize Foundation located in Des Moines, retiring in January of 2020. Established by Nobel Peace Prize laureate Norman Borlaug, under the ambassador's leadership, the World Food Prize came to be referred to by global leaders as the Nobel Prize for Food and Agriculture. During his tenure, individuals from 19 countries, including six laureates from Africa, received the $250,000 annual award for their breakthrough achievements to reduce hunger and malnutrition. Ambassador Quinn was presented the State Department Award for Heroism and is a recipient of the Iowa Medal, that the state's highest citizen honor. He served as chair of the Iowa committee that raised the funds for and selected the artist to create the statue of Dr. Borlaug that stands in Statuary Hall of the U.S. Capitol. A graduate of Loras College in Dubuque, he holds a PhD in international relations from the University of Maryland. Please join me in welcoming Ambassador Quinn, who will talk about when Iowa led the world in humanitarian leadership. Welcome, Ambassador. How are you today?
Oh, Peter, thank you. Congratulations to you on your new appointment. And I want to say that I feel particularly fortunate to be here for this program, because the last time I was in Iowa City, I had a near-death experience, and I wasn't sure I was going to make it to my next birthday or still be, still be on alive and kicking. It happened when I was driving with my wife on I-80, and we were hit. We were going 70 miles an hour, and we were hit from behind by a drunk driver with a truck who caved in our car, totaled it. There's a picture of it on the screen. We almost were driven off the road. Somehow I kept it on the interstate, but then the driver who hit us fled the scene. And the interesting part of the story is, traveling right behind us was former governor and former ambassador to China, Terry Branstad, and his wife, Chris. And his wife, Chris, was driving their car, and they saw what happened. They chased after the drunk driver, forced her to pull over, called the police. And this was, justice was served. And my wife and I are still alive, feeling very fortunate. So I was prepared to come to Iowa City in person, but with COVID and everything. But I probably would have been quaking and shaking a little as we drove there.
That's quite a story, Ambassador. We're thrilled, of course, that you survived that. And this picture of your automobile is quite incredible. That's a harrowing tale. And let's be glad that we're all joining from the comfort of our homes. Boy, oh boy. When the ambassador and I talked about how we would like to proceed with today's program, we thought a sort of conversational style might be really great. So I've got a series of questions for you, Ambassador, sure. And we're really excited to hear everything you have to share with us about this about this really important topic. So to begin, briefly, will you share what in your background led you to be in Governor Ray's administration? And then maybe you can tell us a bit about how your background, led to your long career in public service.
Yeah, well, I went to Loras in Dubuque. I dreamed of going to the University of Iowa, but we didn't have enough money. I only could go to college because I lived at home and had room and board in our house. And I wanted to go to law school, but didn't have enough money to pay for even take the law board's test. But the Foreign Service exam was free, and I took that. And I did really well at good teachers at Loras, or maybe they got my scores mixed up with some guy from Harvard or Princeton or Georgetown. But I got in, and I showed up in 1967. Expecting I would be sent to Paris or Vienna, London. I'd be going to fancy parties and chandeliered ballrooms. And instead, the State Department sent me to Vietnam, and not at the embassy, but working out in rice growing villages. I led, as a civilian, a U.S. Army advisory team. There I am with some of my members of my team. I was out in combat with them. I earned the Air Medal for flying helicopter combat missions. And I learned the lesson of my life, the transformative power of rural roads and new seeds, like Norman Borlaug had developed. I saw it in rice. And I became to realize that working in rural areas and rural villages and developing countries was probably what I was put on earth to do. And so I spent 6 years in Vietnam, and then one day got a message dropped off by a plane. I was being transferred to the National Security Council at the White House to be on Henry Kissinger's staff. So we picked up, I married my fiance and there, and I learned to speak Vietnamese pretty well. So I was interpreter for President Ford as South Vietnam was falling. Met with, you know, and interacted with Henry Kissinger. And I was involved, and I was in Saigon shortly before the fall on April 29th of 1975, the day when the American ambassador flew off the top of the embassy there, leaving a terrible, ignominious moment in American foreign policy. And April 29th happened to be the same day that our car was struck in Iowa City. And that's also our wedding anniversary. So it was my 48th wedding anniversary last April 29th and 47th anniversary of the end of America's involvement in Vietnam and the Vietnam War and the beginning of refugee program. And refugees were then about 130,000 refugees. And I was very involved with arranging for the evacuation of refugees. And I came to Iowa and met Governor Ray for the first time in 1976. He was holding a celebration for the Thai Dam refugees who had been resettled in Iowa as part of that 130,000 refugees. And it's probably the first story about Governor Ray and his great humanitarian heart. Every state had to take a certain proportion of those 130,000. And there were this group of refugees from Laos with their own culture, their own language, the Thai Dam. And they were fearful that they were going to be scattered across America and lose their culture and everything that bound them together. And they wrote to every governor saying, please, won't you take us as a people? And the one governor who answered their letter and said he would take them all in Iowa, and then went and lobbied in Washington and said, I want all the Thai Dam to come here, and set up a special agency to welcome them. And they were holding a celebration, and I came to read a letter from President Ford at that event. And so I got up and gave my remarks and then added some of myself. I was meeting Governor Ray for the first time. And as I came back to sit down, he said, we sure could use a guy like you here in Iowa. And that one sentence, and he was such a compelling person that when I became eligible for that program, you had to be in for 10 years, I said, I want to go to Iowa and I want to be on loan to the governor, still a State Department, federal employee under the Hatch Act, no politics. And I showed up in September of 1978 and I became a member of his staff. First thing I dealt with was the issues in the National Guard. We had to fire the adjutant general and have a new adjutant general appointed. And then in January of 1979, there was a TV show with Ed Bradley, CBS reports. Governor Ray was at a Drake basketball game. He's a Drake alum. And we said, you should come back to the office, Governor, as he often did. And we showed him this TV show filmed by Ed Bradley of refugees still fleeing from Vietnam, sort of a new wave of refugees, 4 years after the end of the war, people who were chafing under this authoritarian communist rule, people who had been associated with the South Vietnamese government, desperate to have new lives, were getting on these small boats and making their way out into the South China Sea. And Ed Bradley saw one of these boats, and because no country in the world was accepting refugees, any more refugees from Indochina, including America. Our doors were shut. And Governor Ray watched as refugees who had landed on an island off Malaysia were now being pushed back out in the ocean. They were given gas, given for their boat, given food, but don't stay here. These local officials, fearful of being inundated, you know, go someplace else. And as Bradley's camera rolled, a boat like this one you see there, filled with refugees, even bigger, broke apart in the waves. And you watch as people drowned before your eyes. And it was such a stunning moment. And I remember Governor Ray was so deeply affected by it. And he got up and started, he couldn't sit still, and said, you know, explain to me, why is this happening? And I said, well, it's happening because our doors are shut. And he said, we have two choices. Either we can reach out a hand to try to save the lives of these people, or we can turn our backs. And Governor Ray could not turn his back. That night at midnight, we drafted a letter, which he then signed to President Carter saying, Mr. President, if you will just reopen America's doors, Iowa will double the number of refugees that we have already resettled. He became the first and only governing leader in the world to say that he would accept, that Iowa would accept more refugees from Indochina. Of course, the governor didn't have the authority to open America's doors, but he recruited two other governors, one Republican, Bill Milliken from Michigan, and a Democrat, Brendan Byrne from New Jersey. They went to Washington, they lobbied the president. We went and lobbied the State Department. And July of that year, there was a special UN conference on the boat people refugees in Geneva. And Governor Ray and Governor Byrne were invited, I was invited. And as we met at this UN gathering with the Secretary General, Kurt Waldheim, delegations from all UN countries, and country after country got up, and either if they were communists said, this is just American propaganda, and everyone else said, isn't it terrible? We wish somebody would do something to help these poor people. And then Walter Mondale, Vice President Mondale, got up and said, once before America turned people away from its shores, the ship St. Louis filled with Jews trying to escape the Holocaust came and were turned away. And that must never happen again. The president has decided that America will accept 168,000 refugees a year, sent the US Navy to the South China Sea to rescue the boat people who were fleeing in such large numbers to keep them from drowning or being marauded by pirates. And at that moment, when Mondale announced that, all of the other, except for the communists, all the other UN members stood up and gave a spontaneous standing ovation to the United States of America for our humanitarian leadership. A humanitarian leadership that began late at night on a really cold day in January of 1979, when Governor Bob Ray watched that video and made his decision. 1979 was an incredible year in terms of international developments. 2 or 3 months later, Pope John Paul II came to Living History Farm. I was the coordinator on behalf of the governor of all the public safety arrangements. Then 3 weeks after that, we left for China as the first delegation of governors there when we had established diplomatic relations. And following that trip to China. Governor Ray said to the other governors, we should stop in Thailand and let's go and see the refugee situation there. And so in very early November, 1979, this plane with governors had just been in China. We land at in Bangkok, expecting we're going to go to out to see a camp. It wouldn't be very well done. But the ambassador met us there, said, we have to take you out to this place called Sakhale at the Cambodian border because 30,000 victims of the Khmer Rouge Pol Pot genocide have just escaped into Thailand. And so the next morning with governors, like there's a picture there, Governor Milliken from Michigan, then Governor Lamb from Colorado, a Democrat, and the governors went there and we saw this array of human suffering that none of us had ever seen before. 30,000 human beings strewn out in this open farm field with just these little yellow sheets distributed to cover them from the rain, emaciated, starving, dying at the rate of 50 to 100 a day, their bodies being bulldozed into mass graves, some of them so weakened that they just would stop and couldn't move anymore in place. Little children, some orphans, so weak, so frail, dying with so little help. There was a makeshift hospital set up where people running and bringing in medicine. And it was staggering. It was overwhelming. All the photos you see were taken by Governor Ray, who was always had his camera with him. And when we came back in then early November, we were met at the airport and a reporter from the Des Moines Register named David Yepsen met us there and started interviewing the governor and Mrs. Ray and myself. And he asked the governor, do you have any film? And the governor took out and held out his hand with filled with these yellow rolls of Kodak film. I don't think anybody sees those anymore. And he said, just as if to say they're undeveloped. And Yepsen said, can we have them? Will you give us the Des Moines Register, your film? And so there's this sort of moment and Governor Ray sort of hesitated. You could see him thinking, but his trust and belief in the press and the fairness, he hands the film to David Yepsen. They run back to the Register. The Register, was distributed all over the state in those days. And the next day, the newspaper said, I watched people die, Ray, was the headline. And this set off an incredible electric current across the state of people coming and said, we have to do something, Governor, we have to do something. And all the state's religious leaders came to see him, said, Governor, we'll be behind you. The editor of the Register, Michael Gartner, said, I don't know what you're gonna do, but I'll put my papers, editorial pages behind you. And the governor said to me when they all left, what should we do? And I said, let me think about it. And that night it sort of occurred to me, came to me at 2 a.m. that Iowa shares. Iowa sends help to aid refugees and end starvation. And I said to the governor, we could do this. We could give Iowans a chance to make donations. We got a post office box. We set up a sort of nonprofit organization and we recruited the leading Democrats and Republicans and religious leaders from several faiths and very prominent individuals. And the day before Thanksgiving, we launched an appeal and said, just clip out this coupon, send it with what you can. And so people started doing that. And by middle of December, we had a couple of $100,000, which was, probably close to about $1 million in today's money. And I tried to find who could deliver food and medicine to the Cambodian border of Thailand and deliver our, life-saving support. And I finally talked to this wonderful Monsignor at Catholic Relief, and he said, we'll do it. And the they our gifts arrive on Christmas Day. I think there was a headline from there. And when you got up in the morning and you went out and picked up your Des Moines Register on your front porch, it said, "Our gifts reach refugees." But the people kept giving. So we had sent food, we sent medicine. And right before Christmas, Dr. Bill Rosenfeld, a graduate of the University of Iowa Medical School, was practicing in Mason City, called me and said, "I want to go and help. I'm prepared to leave my practice. I don't need to be paid. I want to go." And so we quickly put together an Iowa Shares medical mission. We had a number of nurses volunteer. We paid for all their travel and upkeep. And Dr. Rosenfeld, after he stayed 3 or 4 months, and he came back and he wrote about his experience. And it was so incredibly compelling. 112,000 refugees there. And he was the only doctor. And he was seeing 60 to 70 people a day. And he said he saw more emergency medicine in 4 days than he would see in the rest of his life. And it was so incredibly compelling and rewarding. And people in Iowa kept giving money. We had some young kids send us their Christmas money, said, "I have my Christmas money for my parents. I want it to go to Iowa Shares." We had a woman who said, "I don't have any money to send," but she mailed us her wedding rings and said, "Please sell these to raise money for these people." Well, we sent her rings back to her, but it gives you an idea. Their special collections were taken up at schools, in churches, in synagogues, at civic organizations. And it 4 years after the end of the very divisive Vietnam War, this event brought people back together again in this incredibly compelling and remarkable way. And that, again, all emanated from Governor Ray's sense of humanity and of the sense that even though these people were as different from him and different from Iowans as they could be, whether the color of their skin, the religions that they followed, the language they spoke, their culture and customs, for Governor Ray, it was like the parable of the Good Samaritan. You have an obligation to people because they are fellow human beings, not because they're a member of my tribe or another tribe. They are fellow human beings. Their lives are at risk. And he spoke incredibly compelling ways about that. The greatest speech he ever gave, I feel sure, was when in Missouri, when he went and addressed, not as governor, but as a member of the Church of Christ, their national convention. And at the time, refugee programs were seen as perhaps taking away, a way of punishing North Vietnam. And Governor Ray got up and he talked and described what he had just seen. And he said, "Here we are in the show me state. Don't tell me about your Christian values, show me. Don't tell me about how much you care for people who are suffering, show me." Jesus is saying to us here as we gather tonight, and that here, this is the opportunity to show me, you know, your love of Jesus and your caring for these fellow human beings. And it was, and the church voted, you know, overwhelming support for the refugee relief programs. In Des Moines, when you come, you should go and see the Robert D. Ray Asian Garden. I had a role in that. They couldn't find money or donors to build it. And I said, just name it the Robert D. Ray Asian Garden, and you'll see what happens. money flowed in and the garden was created. Governor Ray is sitting in front of a painting that I commissioned by an artist from Maquoketa. And that's a woman depicted, taken from a photo that he made, a Cambodian woman with her baby who had inspired the governor. The painting hangs in the World Food Prize Hall of Laureates in Des Moines. I hope you go and visit the Iowa Gallery there. It's wonderful paintings about many, many events and individuals from Iowa's humanitarian and agricultural heritage, which unites us all. I endeavored to build into the World Food Prize this sense of Iowa and our heritage, our humanity, the legacies of Norman Borlaug, the great World Food Prize laureate, great Nobel Peace Prize laureate, with whom I worked for a decade. He and Governor Ray, along with Corazon Aquino, former president of the Philippines, were the three most inspiring individuals with whom I ever associated in my 50 plus years in foreign affairs. And the compelling concern to alleviate human suffering that Governor Ray and Dr. Borlaug had came together for me in the World Food Prize Hall of Laureates. And I endeavored to build our Borlaug dialogue into this compelling program where we would have the top speakers from around the world come. There you see Kofi Annan came to Des Moines. Bill Gates launched his multi-billion dollar initiative to end poverty, uplift Africa at the World Food Prize. Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General, came when we gave our prize, our $250,000 prize, to an Israeli Jewish irrigation pioneer who had been nominated by three Muslim Arab scientists. And what an incredible moment. Tony Blair came, and his programs to uplift Africa there. And we would hold our laureate award ceremony in the state capital. So it was always an event that brought Republicans and Democrats together, had them standing together, cheering together, applauding as the World Food Prize reflected that great agricultural humanitarian heritage that everyone in our state should feel. Even Dr. Borlaug could get John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid to be act nice with each other and sit still while we unveiled the Borlaug statue. And perhaps the most remarkable thing was that in Iran, they contacted me. The statue was unveiled on March 25th, 2014, the 100th anniversary of Borlaug's birth. And a month later, I got an email from someone saying, can we buy a copy of the statue to put up on our campus? And I said, sure, I'll put you in touch with the artist. And it turned out they were from the Agricultural Biotechnology Research Institute in Iran. And they wanted to put Norman Borlaug's statue up on their campus because Borlaug was a hero in Iran. And I went there and I spoke about Borlaug and I got a standing ovation led by the mullah sitting there at the end of that front row. But also at the World Food Prize, I had the opportunity to host Xi Jinping, who was then vice president of China. He came to address the US high-level agricultural symposium. We were the host and we were walking in. I said, by the way, Mr. Vice President, I also escorted your father around Iowa in 1980 when he came as governor of Guangdong province. And Xi Jinping sort of stopped in his tracks, looked at me, got a big smile and told me what I had sort of two interesting stories, one about him coming and one about his dad coming. So I had, you know, a number of other experiences at the World Food Prize. I got to meet interesting people. you know, I got to meet the Pope. I'm there with then Prince Charles. So when people say, what were you talking about, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle? But say, you know, my lips are sealed on that. But and then I had one of the, you know, the great honors of my life to receive the Io Medal under the portrait of Dr. Borlaug. And my, you know, theme, looking back through my 50 some years, peace through agriculture, whether it's peace of bringing aid to refugees, whether it's peace of bringing Israelis and Arabs and Muslims together, of highlighting the great works of Governor Ray and Norman Borlaug. I've been incredibly fortunate to have those opportunities. And I just wanted to mention one other hero. On February 1st, one of my last effort with Simon Estes, he and I worked for 2 years to have a special recognition of George Washington Carver. And February 1st is going to be the inaugural day of recognition for Professor Carver, who there's only been in the 177 year history of Iowa, 3 days of recognition. One is for Herbert Hoover, one for Norman Borlaug, and now the third is for George Washington Carver, born enslaved in Missouri, turned away from colleges there because of the color of his skin, comes to Iowa, is accepted to study at Simpson and then at Iowa State, which had never had a Black student in its history, gets a bachelor and master's degree, the first Black faculty member, and then Booker T. Washington contacts him and says, you have to come to Tuskegee. And there he spends the remainder of his life until January 5th, 1943, when he passes away, educating you know, new Black generations in the South. But also, while there, is contacted in 1929 by Mahatma Gandhi, who's beginning his campaign to throw off British colonial rule, and who is worried that he won't be strong enough, and he asks for Carver's help. And Carver writes back and forth to Gandhi for 6 years, giving him advice. So today, a billion plus people live in sovereignty, independence, and democracy, and an Iowan, George Washington Carver, a scientist only because of Iowa, played a small, but perhaps not insignificant role in all of those people being free. I hope you'll take a moment. I hope there can be opportunities to observe Carver's legacy either on that day or sometime in February through the Foreign Relations Council. So that's been my journey.
Mr. Ambassador, you've had a remarkable career. And as you've so aptly described, it signals a humanitarian leadership. I wonder if for our audience, you might share some thoughts on if let's say we go back to your remarks on Governor Ray's reaction to, and then very, very public, very demonstrable support for refugees, particularly the Thai Dam. As you think about that legacy, what lessons could you share with us today? The world refugee crisis is perhaps worse than in those days. What do you think we can learn from Governor Ray and from your time with him and what he showed us about how to welcome and support people from around the world? What sort of humanitarian leadership do we need today that might be inspired by the governor?
Yes. So I've been asked this several times, and I, you know, think about it. I believe back then there was a sense that the problem could be defined as to its size, how many people would be involved, and with a sense there was kind of a beginning and an end, that it was something that had come on the scene, that there was an intensely compelling need, that lives were at stake, that there was true human suffering, extensive human suffering, and that by helping, you could alleviate that suffering. And so he would be able to tell people about that. In thinking of current times, perhaps what might have been somewhat similar would have been Afghanistan. Mm. There was an airlift of more than 100,000 people out of Kabul. There were a number of people there who had sided with us during the war, to whom we might feel an obligation. If they remained under the Taliban, they could be, suffer greatly at retribution that would come. Probably that kind, be somewhat similar to the refugee issues from Indochina. And so a sense of what was causing it, did it have some, definition of a beginning, an end, or about what number of people might be affected? And I think now that the global issues of refugees, of migration, people sailing to cross borders, which is going on in the UK or France, Greece, other European countries with migrants from North Africa, from the Middle East, our southern border, is it perhaps is less understood in terms of the size and definition involved and the different causes involved. I say to people whenever I speak that we face the single greatest challenge in all human history. Can we as a species, can humanity provide and grow and produce sustainably enough nutritious food to feed the 9 to 10 billion people who will be on our planet by the year 2046, when Iowa celebrates its bicentennial? That, I believe, is the greatest challenge, and it's not clear that we are going to meet it. But what is clear is that to the extent that people remain hungry and living in starvation, or they will not sit still, people will migrate towards food. And you see that happening now. And this is what people are the economic migrants? Are they coming because of starvation? Are they coming because of food shortages? And I don't believe probably the media, TV, print, has done a very good job of explaining the dimensions of this. But one thing is clear, is that if we do not address the issues that are causing people to be hungry and poor or facing starvation in and extreme poverty and malnutrition in their country, if we don't help address those, then the numbers of people fleeing and endeavoring to come to more developed countries will only increase. And you may stop them at one place, but that only means they will then find other ways and other places to enter.
Yeah, well put, Mr. Ambassador. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And what you're suggesting also is that it takes a kind of humanitarian leadership, which may exist at some times, may exist with some leaders, but that is needed more and in a greater collective effort. to address what is happening in many places around the world.
Yes.
Before we turn to...
Could I make one last point?
Yeah, please.
The key question to be asked is, to whom do you have an obligation? Societies have to answer that. Herbert Hoover said, well, America has answered that back in 1918. We are our brother's keeper. Should be, I guess, our sister's keeper as well. But that will be a question that our country has to ask and answer. And it's a great ethical question in that regard.
Yeah, yeah, excellent point. I could not agree with you more, Ambassador. For folks in the audience, Ambassador Quinn has gone into such rich detail about his time serving with Governor Ray. And if you would like to learn more about the governor, there was a recent Iowa PBS special about him, which you can see here, just a screenshot here. In addition, the ambassador was kind enough to make reference to me, to this book, The Good Governor, Robert Ray and the Indochinese Refugees of Iowa, a book by Matthew Walsh. And he also pointed out to me that in Des Moines at Drake University, there is the Robert D. and Billy Ray Center right here. And I mean, what an apt description, improving lives and strengthening communities. So if you'd like to learn more about the governor, his time, his incredible support of refugees to the state of Iowa, these are some great sources. In addition, when the ambassador and I were talking about our program today, we agreed that it would be beneficial also not just to share information with you and to help you learn more about the sort of historical legacy of Governor Ray and the ambassador's efforts, maybe particularly with the World Food Prize, but also in reference specifically to refugees and immigrants, these organizations. We would encourage you to support these incredible organizations and the work that they do around the state of Iowa to welcome and support refugees and immigrants at all points of their lives here in the state. With that, I'd like to take us to the Q&A. Please submit your questions via the chat function at the bottom of your viewing screen. Feel free to turn on your video function, but please keep yourself muted, okay? While we're waiting for questions to come in, ICFRC wants to thank its members and donors for their support. We are incredibly grateful. If you would like to join ICFRC or make a gift to support our programs, please go to icfrc.org. Thank you. Let me just look in the chat here. Ambassador, I have a question here for you. Immigrants coming from the southern border aid Iowa's economy in many ways, from workforce to entrepreneurial enterprises. What, if anything, can be done to make Iowa more welcoming for them?
So I don't know that I'm necessarily the right person to answer that, but I think that through the Iowa Economic Development Commission, Debbie Durham there, they're very business oriented. And also there's the Iowa Business Council, and I think, and the associate, there's an agribusiness association, former Secretary of Agriculture Bill Northey heads. And I believe the most influential voices in the state come from the CEOs, business leaders in business community statewide, and in, you know, the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City corridor, the Des Moines, Ames corridor, and those voices can be extremely influential in that regard.
Thank you, Ambassador. I don't see any questions in the chat. Please do add them there. I want to briefly go back to something that you and I talked about and something you didn't touch on your remarks today, but maybe you would for a moment. Yeah. You told me of this incredible scene, and we showed some pictures a little while ago from the governor and your several other governors' trip to the Thai border.
Yes.
And you mentioned to me that upon arrival, there was in fact a welcome to Governor Ray sign there.
Yes.
And you also mentioned something that I found really intriguing, because it sort of begs the question of, you know, how did one get their hands on such a such a finite material? But I think you told me that as a kind of symbol of hope,
yes,
there was also this Iowa Department of Transportation state map. The state map of, yes, Iowa was there in the refugee camp. And it was,
yes,
it was truly a recognition that Iowa was doing pretty exceptional things at that time and in that place, and provided hope. Did I get all that right?
No, yes. So remember, we were going to Thailand just to see kind of regular refugee camps where there were people waiting, hoping to get opportunities to come to America and be accepted into our refugee program. This scene up at the Cambodian border was brand new. We went there, it was terrible. But after we were there, we then visited some of these other camps. And one of them was a camp that held Thai Dam refugees from Laos. So they had some relatives in Iowa, in the US. We got there and they had made a sign with Governor Ray's name on it. Welcome, Governor Ray. Wow, that was very startling. And as they escorted us in to their camp, so this is a camp, it's like thatched dwellings, lean-tos, little, you know, places to keep you dry out of the rain, walking through this sort of dirt, muddy field. And they said, we want to show you our symbol of hope. So we wondered, what could it be? Was it a religious icon, some type of carving, some, you know, the statue of some point? And they brought us to this little thatched lean-to, and we walked in and they said, there. They pointed to the wall there. That's our symbol of hope. And here is the Iowa Department of Transportation highway map on that, tacked up on this thatched wall. And in it are pins where other Thai Dam are living now. And they said, that's our hope. Our hope is to go to Iowa and to join our relatives there. And I thought to myself, what an incredible moment that for people 12,000 miles away, that Governor Ray had made the shape of our state a symbol of hope for desperate human beings striving for some type of refuge, mm-hmm, and a way to bring their lives into safety and way to bring up their children. If I could add, there's another story like that told to me by the Catholic Bishop of Des Moines, who went to Rome when Pope John Paul II was near death. And the bishops were given an opportunity to have a brief moment to say goodbye to the Holy Father, who was very weak. And the bishop said when he got up there, he'd never met the Pope before, said, I'm Joseph Sharon, the Bishop of Des Moines. You'll remember, Your Holiness, your trip to Iowa in 1979. And he said the frail Pope, who was there, barely able to move his head, suddenly had this moment where he sort of got a little flow of adrenaline. And he raised his head, and in this halting voice, he said, Iowa. And then he paused, farms, and then he paused, refugees. So the man, the individual who put the word refugees on the lips of a dying pope was Governor Robert D. Ray.
Those are compelling details, Ambassador. It's quite incredible. I mean, there's a real sort of, you know, global connection here, an understood global recognition of Iowa's humanitarian leadership. You pointed out so nicely. There are two questions in here that I'd like to get to. The first, you represent the best model of public service.
Oh, thank you.
What advice do you have for our students who are interested in careers like yours?
So I get this question. I ran a program at the World Food Prize for high school students. So, you know, the first thing is start as young as you can, becoming involved in these issues. I would send high school students who are 16 or 17 to work at international agricultural research centers for 8 weeks. It's a transformative experiences. And I encourage students to become involved, and find the space of global food security. So you don't have to go to Iowa State. Please don't tell President Winterstein I said that. I'll be in trouble up there. But you don't have to go there. You can do that at the University of Iowa as well. It's an international relations. But in the issues of citizen diplomacy and what can be done through nonprofit organizations, through research in food security, global food security, and the well-being of people around the world. The great challenge is in Africa, where they're going to have another billion people in the next 20 years. And Africa is in desperate need of being uplifted. And so I would encourage students to become involved, find opportunities to go and to countries, experience them, do internships if you can afford it, they're volunteer, but go there, see that and find your place. I only found what I wasn't smart enough to ask myself what I should do. I only found out because the State Department forced me to go to Vietnam. I would never have chosen that for myself. And yet I discovered there. So we all need to discover what is it, what instinct, what background, where can we make our contribution? For some, it may be going to teach. For others, it may be in medical treatment, medical issues, nutrition. There are so many places. So for some, it might be in diplomacy, maybe in, working. I sometimes, you know, you can have great adventures in the, National Guard or in the military. And that there are many opportunities to do incredible things there. So explore, be open. And one of the themes of in my life is wrong turn, right road. I thought so many times I had made a wrong turn, like going to Vietnam. Only by making the wrong turn, I discovered the right road for myself. And if we had time, I'd tell you about 10 other times I made the wrong turn, only discover that I found the right road. So don't hesitate.
I'm going to steal that if you don't mind.
Please,
I'll give you the rights to that when I use it. I love that.
I have no copyright.
Okay. Our last question, we don't have time to go into it, is about the differences between Governor Ray's administration and reception to refugees and the differences in today's Iowa governor. And I think there I will just note that, you know, I would strongly encourage folks to check out ICFRC's report that we did. And I'll note that we shared with lawmakers, including the governor, recently Our series was called Refugees and Immigrants in Iowa. And we at Iowa City Foreign Relations Council hope that our policies, our procedures do become more welcoming and supportive of refugees and immigrants. Though, as aptly put to me by the bureau chief for the Bureau of Refugee Services in Des Moines, Vox Ucheska, it is less important about who is in office and more that the needs of those individuals are being addressed. And tireless work, I can assure you, from people like Vox Ucheska and those organizations we noted earlier, is happening. So I thank you so much, Ambassador Quinn, for this excellent presentation. This is ICFRC's first program of the spring semester. Our next program features speaker Carrie Schupels, who will be talking about the Indian card, America's Native Identity Problem. I hope you will join us next week for that fabulous presentation. Thank you for joining us today. Again, Mr. Ambassador, I am grateful for your time today. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, everybody.